Hi, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, I am giving you a quick shot of romance, but author spotlight edition. And on this spotlight, I am welcoming author Nadia El Fazi. Did I say that right?
You said it right. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. I made Brianna send me phonetic like pronunciations, but sometimes I still get it wrong. So, but welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. As I said, I'm a really huge fan of the podcast. So always a pleasure to be welcomed on.
All right. Nadia El Fazi, author of Best Hex Ever and Love at First Sprite, is a half Moroccan, half Australian writer of fantasy, romance, and horror. She has an addiction to iced coffee, period dramas, buying D&D dice, and watching horror movies. They live in Hertfordshire with her husband and perfectly round cat. You can find them on Instagram. So, question. So you are big into D&D?
I am very, very much so.
So my son plays Warhammer. Have you heard
Oh,
of
yes.
Warhammer?
I have very much heard of Warhammer.
So when I talk to people about it, I'm like, it's kind of a mix between Risk and D&D. Do you feel like that is an accurate description?
I 100% agree. I feel like it's
Okay.
in many ways, while I haven't played Warhammer, I have many friends who play D&D and Warhammer,
Okay.
and the metrics sound very similar.
Okay, well that thank you for
You're on the
justifying
right
this,
track.
because I said that one time and he's like, no, it's not. I'm like, yeah, but you've never played D&D, so
Oh,
you
who's gonna
don't
play
know.
D&D? There's a whole world out there.
Oh, they're war, like he and two of his best friends play and they go for hours. Like, I think they've
Incredible.
only finished like one game ever.
Wow.
And so I can only imagine how long a D&D quest would be for them.
I mean, we've been playing ours for years. So it's, and it will have years to go. So it's definitely, you're in it for the long haul.
I don't know if I want to get him started on that though. The ADHD, like, yeah, I don't know if I can handle
Sure.
that. So let's talk about you. So what initially drew you to romance as a writer?
Honestly, I've always been a romance reader. I, from taking my mum's bodice rippers way back in the day, or like the first time I read, I think it was like an abridged version of Pride and Prejudice. And even then, I was like, oh, the wit, the thrill that you feel when you see these two characters having this sort of this back and forth. I was addicted to it. And then very quickly started, well, I was very much a teenager during the Twilight Shiver, Raven Boys, Hush Hush era of like dark teen paranormal romance. So I was absolutely glutted myself on Fallen Angel, Werewolf, Vampire, Shifter, all of that. So I think anyone who grew up in that era, I think the sort of pipeline of teen romance reader to romanticy slash cozy family slash romantic fiction writer is such a strong one. So I think it was always a guilty pleasure. I did a very two very serious degrees in English literature and poetry, and I was always reading romance and historical romance on the side. And then after a while, I think I finished both those degrees and I realized it doesn't actually have to be a guilty pleasure. I don't have to hide that I love these books, and I was always writing fan fiction, and I didn't have to sort of, I wasn't guilty about it anymore. It was just this thing that I loved.
So writing fanfic, like you probably posted that and did those things, but what made you write that first novel and like get it published?
Honestly, I started writing Best Hex Ever during the pandemic. So my day job is that I'm a senior commissioning editor at a big five publisher, sort of a SFF, science fiction, fantasy, and horror imprint. So I do a lot of reading, I do a lot of editing, I work as a sort of project manager with my authors. So I was doing a lot of the sort of epic fantasy and like secondary world romanticy and all of that. And I think during the pandemic, obviously we were all working from home, and it was just this idea of I couldn't see my friends in person. So I was writing this story where, this woman runs a cafe, but her friends come and visit her and they drop in, and everyone that you love is accessible to you, and you can see them and you can hug your family and friends. And I had a real sense of homesickness at the time, both for, being able to see my parents and for Morocco, where my mum's from and where I sort of spent a lot of my time growing up. And so I was like, how do I deal with my Britishness and my sort of Moroccan half and put that into a book? So that's really how Best Hex Ever came about. Just, I think, I wanted the feeling that that book gave me, and so I sort of wrote it until I got that feeling and I felt that comfort. But I never really knew whether it was going to get published or not. I sort of sent it out, did the querying process, where I sent it to agents. And again, because of my job as an editor, a lot of these agents already knew me from that side of things. So I sort of said to them, "Hey, by the way, I've written a book. Would you like to look at it?" And that's sort of how I signed with my agent, Maddie. But I was never sure whether that would be the one we would go out on submission with, but we did, and here we are, and it published last October, so it's already nearly a year since it's been out now.
So it's a little bit of a whirlwind.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think I started writing it sort of autumn winter 2021, and was really just pottering around on it. It was my first experience writing a full romance novel. Like, I'd written long form fan fiction, and sort of written epic fantasies and stuff for myself, but this was the first time I'd written something that I guess you would call a rom-com fully. And yeah, so I was having fun with the format of just writing one anyway.
So do you have any writing rituals or habits that help you stay focused?
That's tricky. I think because I'm working full time, I'm sort of juggling writing in and around that. I am a big believer in romanticizing your life and your workspace as much as possible. I love a little autumnal witchy candle. I love like a sort of buying tea from sort of specialist shops. I think I buy a lot of tea from the Algerian coffee stores in Soho in London, which is like a It's been here for generations. It's one of the most famous coffee shop and tea shops in London. And I think, carving out time, say on a Friday or a Saturday morning, and I'm going to light my special candle, I'm going to make my special tea, and this is my, for the next hour, I focus. But I do also, I think I love a little, and I'm saying this as someone who doesn't have dependents, aside from a very needy cat. My husband's very supportive. He'll make me lots of coffees, and I don't have any kids, so I'm not having to juggle additional childcare. That is a one big thing, I think, which I'm not having to deal with at the moment. So, I can step out, for Sunday morning and go and sit in a cafe for half the day. My husband will be working on he's our DM for our D&D campaign, so he'll be doing his D&D prep, and I'll be doing some drafting. But I think also surrounding yourself with other authors who are at a similar stage in their careers or more progressed, like it doesn't really matter actually really where they are in their careers, but I think surrounding yourself with author friends where you can say, "Hey, let's go and sit in this cafe, and we're not actually going to talk for the next 2 hours, but we're going to write."
Just spend
And
that
then
time together.
yeah, it's so useful, I think, and just having that support network of other people, whether you're in the querying trenches trying to sign with an agent, I think knowing that other people are there and they're in the weeds with you is so it's so good for your mental health.
It is, and there's always talk about how being an author, like across any genre, how it's such an isolated like career because you for the most part, you do a lot of it yourself.
Sitting
Like,
alone, yeah.
yes, there's a lot of sitting alone. So it's like, yes, you might have a team that helps you, but at like the end of the day, like you're doing most of the work by yourself,
Yeah.
like in your own headspace. And so it would be hard. And there are authors who thrive in that kind of environment. And hey, I like to be alone as much as the next person, but there comes to a point where it's like, that's a lot of alone time.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm very extroverted, which makes it difficult to be. I think the concept of being a full-time author is exciting at some point in my life, but also very daunting because I'm like, right, but I need to speak to people in person every day, otherwise I will go insane. So that's something to experience at some point.
Well, and then it's like finding that balance, like
Exactly.
going out and doing the coffee shop thing, and even just having like the buzzing around you might make a difference.
I mean, having said that, when you are on deadline, you're like, "No one talked to me, no one messaged me. I don't want to see another face. I'm gonna lock myself in this room and just sit at this laptop for like 5 hours." So, it depends where in your how close you are to having to deliver a manuscript.
So outside of work and outside of writing, do you have a favorite subgenre that you like to read just for enjoyment?
Oh, I, you know, I'm very partial to monster romance.
I love a good monster.
I love a good monster romance. Someone said to me the other day, they were like, gosh, and they were so alarmed. They were like, have you heard of the Minotaur Milking Farm? I was like, this is
Yes.
like saying to someone who reads Regency romance, have you heard of Jane Austen? Of course I've heard of this. Like, I am a
Oh,
diehard
it's a good
fan.
one.
It's a good one.
I like a well-placed orc romance, to be
Oh, I
honest.
love an orc romance. I really loved Tusk Glove, the new sort
I
of
have
D&D
heard
Critical Role.
such good things about that. I
It's
have not
phenomenal.
read it yet, but everybody that I talk to that has read it, and we have a few people in our community who have read it, and they like have raved about it.
Oh, I read it in, like, they sent it to me for blurbing, and I read it in about 8 hours, and it was just such a good time. I really love Catherine Moon as well. She wrote the Lady of Rooksgrave Manor, which is like a, I don't tend to go in for reverse, I don't want to call it reverse harem, I'm gonna call it
The
white
white
shoes.
shoes, yeah.
Yeah. But she is the exception. But she has another series where the Monster Smash Agency, where the first book is called Games with the Orc. And that is, I sort of pictured to someone, I'm like, okay, so this woman hires an orc escort, like, and she sort of goes to like this house for like a weekend, and yes, it's like a monster erotica, but it's also super cozy and it's super cute and it's like really cottagecore. And they're like, is it? I'm like, no, I swear it is. So I think any opportunity I get to tell people to go read Catherine Moon, I will. So
So
yeah.
she actually is going to be on an episode soon.
Amazing.
Well, because she writes a lot in the Omegaverse, and
Yes.
we read a little bit, but we don't know a lot of the Omegaverse. So we
Oh, I'm a
asked
big
her to
fan.
come on to like kind of break it down, and yeah, so we're really excited about that.
I actually have just recently reread her The Alpha of Bleak Isle, which is
Okay.
like the first book in her Alpha Omega Verse Dragon Shifter Dragonkin series, which I think there's only the first book has come out. But yeah, I'm such a big fan of her, so that's very cool. I'll definitely be listening to that episode.
Well,
But I
that's what I
think
like
like
to hear.
it is great to see people, and obviously when Bride from Ali Hazelwood came out and everyone was like, what's knotting and what's like what's what is this mate thing? What are fated mates? And I was like, this is my time.
You're
I've
like,
been
let
waiting for
me
this.
educate you, take a
Yes, finally.
seat. Yes. So I have a one of my good friends. She is an avid reader, does a lot of romance. She, actually, Omegaverse are her comfort reads. And like when she needs to
Fantastic.
like step back from, because I recommend all the things. But it's really funny because when I first discovered like what she read, she was like, do you have any recommendations? I was like, oh, I have so many. And then I asked her, I was like, so here's a question though. Is consent important to you? And she looks at me dead in the eyes and she's like, maybe. I'm like, okay, I can work with this.
Yeah, I have slightly less, but I think the thing is though, like, I know this comes up a lot with people talking about dark romance and especially indie authors who have gone trad pub and then have had some backlash from their next dark romance book that comes out. There's a bit more, I guess, softened for traditional publishing. I'm doing air quotes, which audio listeners
Nobody's
obviously
gonna see
can't
that,
see.
but
No
yeah,
one can see that, but
I do it all the time. I'm
yeah.
constantly doing things. I'm like narrating as I do it.
Yeah, like imagine the air quotes I speak. But I do think that romance is like a place, it's like a subgenre where we can sort of play around with like taboos and like how far we can push it. And it is a safe space. Like you are sort of effectively, I think, consenting when you read the book. And that's why I'm a really big believer that all romance books should come with content warnings. Like I put content warnings in my books despite the fact that they are effectively cozy cottagecore erotica, like paranormal romances, because I'm still dealing with themes of like there's some off-page cheating that's happened to characters in the in their past. There's grief, parental loss, pet loss, that sort of thing. And I'm just like, I think it's really important when you come to a romance, because some people come to romance for comfort reads, that you're not going to be blindsided by like, suddenly the mum's got cancer and you didn't expect that. I think it's super important. So yeah,
Yeah,
there's a space for everything.
we did a sip and discuss book for this past Wednesday. When we're recording this episode, it is this past Wednesday's episode. And there's a scene in the book that the character gets drugged, but there was no content warning or anything that like this could be happening. It's like, I personally do not have a lot of triggers. Like pretty much anything goes. Like like child death is one which
Yeah.
it triggers a lot of people, but we lost our second born, and so it's like
I'm sorry.
miscarriages, stillborn,
Yeah.
things like that. Like those are huge triggers for me. And so like those ones, but usually those ones people almost always
They'll always
contact
signpost.
trigger warning. So it's not usually an issue. But like this one, there was nothing. And like we went into it and then we got to that scene, which the scene itself seemed out of place. But also it's like you gotta warn people about something like that.
Yeah, I think I do think it's becoming much more common these days. I think especially as dark romance books or like romance books can push a bit more taboo, I think we're seeing it more. But it's definitely something as an editor, I push my authors who are writing anything that's got sort of like spicy content or anything that's like mildly could be seen as taboo. Because I'm like, we never know what other people's limits are,
Exactly.
you know?
Well, and a lot of authors, like we have noticed, where they'll put in like the front matter of the book, like if
Yeah.
content trigger warnings, there's a page on the website. Like they don't put them in the book necessarily, but they have a space
You
for it.
can
So it's
find them,
like
yeah.
there's a way to find them. And I appreciate that one because it's like some people,
Absolutely.
like they want to just go into it blind. And that's the thing. And if you're seeing that, like sometimes you don't. It's like you never know if it's going to be in there or not. So it's like, but there's a space for it if like you know you have something that triggers you as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
So do you have any challenges like as a romance writer? Because unfortunately, like it's still kind of a taboo like career to have, even though it is a billion-dollar industry.
Yeah, I mean, it's the classic thing of, when you're introducing yourself to someone who isn't, in publishing, and you say, I write romance books, because especially, I'm not going to generalize, but I'm going to generalize if you're speaking to a man, they're sort of maybe going to be like, oh, you write like those books. You write books for women. You write chick lit. And I'm like, why is it worth less? Like, why is your Dan Brown book worth any more? Like, what does it matter what the topic or the genre of this thing? Like, I've still written these books and I'm very proud of them. I do think that I haven't met any romance author who isn't like incredibly proud of their writing, and I think that that's just really important, is we're presenting that we're not ashamed of this, of the topics that we've written. And like, I will really happily, like, people will say to me, oh, like, you've written cozy erotica and stuff, and I'll say, yeah, I'm not ashamed to talk about the fact that, say, Love at First Sight deals with dom sub relationship. Like, I will happily talk about the kink community and stuff. I don't think that we need to be ashamed about discussing these topics, and in fact I think they make them more shameful to not talk about them. I do think one thing I have struggled with, my first book, Best Sex Ever, the main character Dina is bisexual, but it is a sort of MF relationship. And I had a lot of people saying, well, this isn't a bi book because this isn't a queer book because she gets together with a man. And I'm a bisexual person in a married to a cis man. And so I sort of have to say, okay, but like, I'm pretty sure I'm still valid. I'm still queer just because like I'm, happen to have found one man that I like, which is always the way I think with bisexual people. But I'm super conscious of the fact that when I'm writing bisexual characters, there's always going to be that subset of the queer and the straight community that says, okay, well, this doesn't count. Because like, but biphobia has always been there. And I think so that was something I was really thinking about with Love at First Sight, because that's a bi for bi romance. And I think bisexual cis men get a lot of stick in the community for, especially from, there's the sense from, again, I'm generalizing a little, but from straight women won't date bi men because they're seen as effeminate and they're not seen as quote unquote masculine enough. And so that was something that I really hate. And I really wanted to sort of, I guess, address in the book. And it is a big theme of the book. So yeah, obviously not, it's not an issue for the main character herself, Rosemary. She is also bisexual, but it's something that Ellis, the main male character, deals with, and it's something he struggles with. So I guess also something that I struggle with.
Well, I think anybody who lives that life struggles with it because there is such a negative connotation to it. Like sexuality has always been a hot button issue. So I
Yeah.
think anybody who is living that kind of life, like there are questions of, am I valid? Is this the
Exactly.
right choice? Like it's the right choice for me, but will people see it as a right choice for me? So are you a pantser or are you a planner? Are you a little mix of both?
I think I'm a mix of both. Because I know I'm writing sort of romance focused fiction, I will sort of plan out the romance arc first. And I sort of know, okay, like I want to have my sort of my meet cute here, and then I want the first kiss roughly in this bit. And so you know the arc that has to happen. You know you're gonna end up with a happily ever after. Third act breakup or no third act breakup, I know is also a
It's
hot
a
button
hot
issue.
button issue, yes.
I'm a big fan. I'm a big
Same,
fan. You can
same.
like pry it from my cold dead hands. Like not every book I write will have one, but I do enjoy a third act breakup. So taking that into consideration, for example. And once I go from there, then I'm sort of I'll have like a maybe a 15-page word vomit sort of thing where I'm like, okay, then this happens. And because all my romance books are dual POV, and I can't really imagine writing one that isn't dual POV, I'm sort of thinking, okay, this will happen from this person's perspective, and then that'll happen from that person's perspective. And that's sort of roughly how I plan it out, imagining what scenes will happen from whose perspective. But sometimes that'll change. Like I'll start halfway through a scene, I'll be like, oh no, actually, this is a much more internally difficult scene for this other character. So I'm going to write it from their perspective because that's going to be more interesting to the reader. But with Love at First Fright, my second book, which is coming out actually 16th of September in the US, and slightly different pub date in the UK. With that, I also have a sort of two other small romances that are happening within the book. The main sort of second romance is between these two Regency ghosts, who are sort of sapphic relationship. And I think that that was extra fun because I was like, okay, so how do I plot their romance arc onto the main character's romance arc? So it did involve a lot more plotting. So I would say if the sort of scale of Plotter to Pantser, I'm much closer to Plotter.
I mean, that makes sense. And that's one thing I like about these interviews is talking to different authors about their process and how every single person, like they might have little like snippets that are similar, but everybody is completely different in their process and their plan and the way they like go about writing.
This is it. I've seen some of my author friends. They have these like really structured, and these are mostly when they're writing like multi-POV epic fantasy or secondary world romancy. They'll have these Excel spreadsheets which are color coded and almost like it hurts my mind to look at them. And I'm like, but this makes sense to you, and that's what matters. This looks like gibberish to me, and it scares me. So.
Well, that's the thing. Like some are super detailed and some are like the characters speak to me and I just let it flow and I'm like,
Exactly.
"Hey, whatever works, you're giving me a great book at the end."
Yeah.
So let's talk Love at First Fright. Like you said, it comes out September 16th here in the US. It is a little mix of everything. There's some enemies to lovers, like, but not really, because once they meet, like that kind of just goes
Yeah.
away. Well, not exactly right after they meet, because they're meeting like
But shortly after, yeah.
shortly after. And then you do have the ghost aspect to it, and they're making a movie based on her book and all these different like elements to it. But so my first question for the story is, what was the inspiration for this series and this story specifically?
I mean, I just love paranormal romance. I love horror, and I think that while hopefully there's a horror rom-com for me on the horizon, this is, where I can write my sort of fun, spooky elements without leaning too much into the horror. So Rosemary, the main character, is a horror author. And we will have met her, readers will have met her for the first time in Best Hex Ever, my debut. So they're sort of interconnected standalones. You can read them in any order. But obviously, I guess minor spoilers for the ending of Best Hex Ever, but it's a rom-com. I think we all know how it's going to end.
Exactly.
But yes, she is the best friend in Best Hex Ever. So where that the main character is a kitchen witch, but we are introduced to Rosemary there, and we know that she can see ghosts. Sort of, I watched a lot of Ghost Whisperer growing up.
I
That
actually
was a
wondered
big
if that was,
inspiration.
well, 'cause
Yeah.
when I read like the prologue and like the whole like her grandma coming, it was like, ooh, does she like Ghost Whisperer? Like that was the first thing that popped into my
Massively.
head.
Yeah, I watched a lot of Ghost Whisperer. That was very formative for me. Yeah, like a lot of that sort of era of like Charm, Buffy, Ghost Whisperer, all of that. I was all over that as a teen. I think writing a character who's a horror author but who can see ghosts, but it's not sort of scary ghosts. I don't know if you've watched the TV show called Ghosts
I
or like
love
the
it. And
BBC
then I
version.
was like, ooh,
Yes.
I wonder if she watches that show too. Have
Absolutely.
you
Like,
seen? I haven't seen the BBC version, but have you watched the American version?
I will say I couldn't make it through two episodes of the American
Oh,
version.
really?
I think it's just a slight difference of the humor. Maybe there is a real dry sarcasm to the British one. I will say also
I
the
mean,
plot is identical.
it is a British humor, so it is pretty
This is
dry.
it. This is it. But I absolutely love the British one. I still sometimes burst into laughter when I think about certain scenes from that show. I really wanted to write something where you have a spooky manor house, which is being used as a film set, for the adaptation of Rosemary's Book into a movie in Love at First Sight. But it's not full of scary ghosts. Like, the scary ghosts are the actors who are pretending to be ghosts. But the actual ghosts are these two Regency gentlewomen called Juliet and Cecilia, who have been haunting the house, and have been in a massive argument because one of them has uncovered letters saying that the other was going to get engaged just before they both died in this carriage accident. And it's the classic trope, which was honestly, I think, part of my favorite bit writing in this book was, you go into a portrait gallery and you see this painting of two Regency women, and it's like Lady X and Lady Y, two best friends who were definitely just best friends and never got married and were buried together.
You're
No
like,
homo.
let me think about that one a little bit.
Yeah, and it's super, super definitely not straight. And I really just wanted to write that. So I think there's this is almost as much about them having their happily ever after in ghost world in their ghostly forms, as it is Rosemary and Ellis. It is also a celebrity romance, I think, in a way that I would only ever write a celebrity romance, in that Ellis is this sort of A-list Hollywood actor who is known for, he's sort of a Hollywood heartthrob who, I guess in my head, he's a little a little Oscar Isaacs, perhaps, in that I try to write someone
Oh,
who
I could see
is
that.
kind of super famous, but you don't know a lot about his private life. And that's, or at least I don't. And so that's kind of how he's super famous, but he just wants to be left alone to tend to his vegetable garden, play with his dog Fig. He doesn't like the limelight. So I think that he is a good, partner to Rosemary in that sense, because she loves being an author, but she is also quite, she has a lot of generalized anxiety. She doesn't know how to deal with fandom and that sort of stuff. I had a great time writing it. It is in some ways, I think, an homage to all the historical romance that I have read. I absolutely love Tessa Dare. I love, a man in a billowing white shirt.
I
You know,
mean,
I think
the white shirt does billow, so.
the white shirt does billow, and I think the sort of that 2005 Pride and Prejudice scene when Mr. Darcy is walking across
The
the field at
field.
sunrise.
Oh,
Yeah,
yeah.
that
Like,
was a
that one
sign of his
just
strong
sticks.
inspiration.
Like, those two things, like the hand
The
clench and
hand
then
flex.
him walking across that field.
This is, I think, my book is as much that energy as I could put into words, I think.
I think I'm gonna have to introduce my youngest to that because I have been slowly making her watch like movies that I enjoy. Like, we watched Miss Congeniality and Legally
Phenomenal.
Blonde, and we started The Devil Wears Prada, but she had to go to bed because, school happens. And so, like, we have been like going through the catalog, and I'm like, but Pride and Prejudice, that would be a good one.
Oh yeah, that's coming. I mean, we've had, it's a very divisive topic to ask people here whether they prefer the Colin Firth 1990s Mr. Darcy or the Matthew McFadden 2005. I am firmly 2005.
I mean, I do like a good Colin Firth Darcy, but there's just something about Matthew McFadden and the way that he like brings that character to
I
life
think
that
he really yearns. Like, there's a
there's
lot
a
of
lot of
yearning.
yearning.
Yeah, I think that's fundamentally the thing I will always try and write in my male characters. Like, I want them to fall fast and hard and faster and harder than the female main character.
Well, and I think part of it is I know Colin Firth is a fabulous, like, serious actor, but I have a hard time taking him seriously sometimes.
I think also if you've like watched that and then you go and watch him as Darcy in Bridget Jones' Diary or something like that,
Yes.
you hear like he
Like, there's
has this sort
such
of
a.
slight awkwardness to him.
Yes. Yes. But I mean, I do really enjoy watching him, though.
Oh, absolutely same.
But that's something in the book too, is there is a very divisive conversation about their favorite Jane Austen book.
Which is just me having an argument with myself, really, through
You're like, how
various
do I get people
characters.
to know that this is my favorite without telling them this is my
Exactly.
favorite?
Pretty much. And I think, and again, yes, so those of you who will read the book, my spoiler, but my favorite Jane Austen is Persuasion. But I think it's because, again, Captain Wentworth is the most yearny of all of the Jane Austen heroes. I think I on a daily basis, I think about the letter that he writes to Anne Elliot in the sort of closing chapters. Like, I am half agony, half hope. Like, who wrote this? Come on, like, that's so romantic. And I think that we really topped there with romance. That there's you can't really peak any higher than that.
Yeah, I agree. It's been a long time since I've read that, but it was always one of my favorites.
I was sorely disappointed by the Netflix adaptation. I am desperately waiting for someone else to do one well, but there is a very good 2007 BBC one on YouTube with I've forgotten the name of the actress. She was in Shape of Water, Sally something. She was also in that new horror movie called Bring Her Back. She's a really famous British actress, and I just can't remember her name, but it's phenomenal.
I don't know. I can't think of who you're talking about.
I've completely blanked.
It's okay. Maybe it'll come to you.
It'll come to me.
I've been like doom scroll. I doom scroll a lot, but it's all about like Olivia Colman and Benedict Cumberbatch right now. And like,
Oh, yes.
so like, I have not like seen anything else but like the two of them everywhere, like promoting their new movie. And it is delightful to watch them because they're so funny. Like, she's so
That's it.
funny. And
She's
he's.
so funny. She's got so much banter about her.
Well, it's, but she seems so freaking nice.
Yeah.
It's like, how can you be that nice?
Yeah. Gosh, I'm, yeah.
But so let's talk about Ellis. So Ellis, like you said, he's a Hollywood actor. He has like he is bi, but it's one of those things that he is not out. And so that is one of the themes throughout the book is how like he is dealing with that, but trying to be open with Rosemary, but also hide that side of him, but he doesn't want to hide that side of him. But there's like all these things that like create like this turmoil inside him. And when Rosemary, or when he finally tells Rosemary, like she's fine with it. And she's like, well, so am I. And he's like, oh.
Yeah, I really didn't want it to be like a big deal, I guess. I think the coming out aspect is a really big part of the plot of my debut Best Sex Ever, and I wanted that to be like a coming out book, and I sort of wanted this to be not like the opposite, because as you said, like coming out of the closet is definitely a big theme. Like, Ellis is someone who was out of the closet and then was forced back in and now is out again. And like I said, I think bisexual cis men have a lot to deal with in terms of like the way that they're perceived by other members of the LGBTQ community. But I really wanted his actual coming out moment to, for Rosemary, for it to just be like this lovely, yeah, okay, like, and I still really like you and I still really care about you. And I wanted it to be easy, because I don't know, I always give our characters a really hard time, but I want them to have some comfort. And I think that, like, is a lot of people come to romance obviously for comfort reading, and you know, there are so many queer people who have had horrible coming out moments with loved ones and friends and family. And so I do think that sometimes it's my job as an author to kind of offer them like a little respite, maybe, and a little sense of like, this is nice, this happens, and then and nothing went wrong, and this is okay.
But I do think it was very valid in the sense that like he was out and then told like it would have ruined his career, and so he went back in. And I think that's very real and something that occurs often.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, so my husband works in film and stuff, and you know, I think I hear a lot about how stressful and chaotic, and like the sort of egos that he has to deal with between like these sort of mega celebrities. And I think just thinking, God, like, what would it be like to be a closeted queer person in this community where every single second of your life is like
Picked
online,
apart.
or yeah, and everyone's like, oh, you know, it's not just like, have they put on weight? It's like, are they wearing this? What are they doing? Who are they seeing? Who are they friends with? So to do all of that and be in the closet, can't fathom it.
I can't
So,
imagine the mental anguish that goes along with that because it's like you're trying to live your life like in the spotlight, but not in the spotlight at the same time. And it's like, but you're there's so much of your world that it's like perceived, and like if somebody goes and sees a movie and doesn't like it, it's like what's going to happen to your career after that? So it's like the mental anguish that goes along with that. And I think that you did a really great job with the way that you created Ellis's character with that.
Thank you. Yeah, I think I hope, I really do love writing dual POV. I think I have so much respect for authors who just do like the single POV because I'm always like afraid to be like, what? I need to know what's going on in my like in the love interest's head,
Same.
and I want to be inside their head. I think partly though because I always have more fun writing them because I just want them to be yearning the whole time, like and I think that that's really that sort of not unrequited love, but that sort of like I don't know yet if this other person likes me back, kind of romance is pretty fun.
I'm on the same boat with the POV thing, but I will say there are a couple authors who write almost exclusively in one POV, and I always enjoy their books because there's just something about the way that they write that I never miss that other one. It's like, you're doing something right. If you can get
Absolutely.
people to keep coming back in that way, which I mean, I sometimes need that second POV, but
I
every
mean,
once
like,
in a
and
while.
I'll read every Ali Hazelwood book that gets put out on the market, and I think she's a great example of someone who does majority single POVs. And I'm always like, I know it's because you're hiding something from me about this man, and I trust that you will reveal it to me in time.
Yeah. I mean, it happens because there's a couple authors that I like where they will write 95% of the book in one point of view, and then like you get those random snippets and
Oh, it's great.
it's amazing and I love it so much. So Rosemary, she has her two friends. She has Emmy and Dina, right? Dina.
Dina,
I was thinking Dima for a second. I'm like, no, that's another book that I was reading. But so their relationship, like they are in different countries, but their relationship is very sound. And I love the support that they give each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think I Like I said, when I started writing book one during the pandemic, like I was physically far away from all my friends and I missed them very much. And I'd actually just got engaged just before the pandemic. So I always had like my bachelorette virtually, So there was like, I think there was a lot of just like, I miss all my loved ones and I want to write them as if they were nearby. But one of my closest friends, Rose, she lives in Canada. So all of my communication with her is essentially virtual. I think you sort of have to adapt to how can I keep my friends close, even if I can't physically keep them close. And so I guess that's a part of it. But I think Rosemary, Dina, and Emmy all met at university when I think I imagine them all. Rosemary was here from a sort of study abroad semester. And they all went to, I think, like a Prince Charles cinema, which is a cinema in central London. And they went to a screening of the Addams Family Values and all went as Cousin It. And then sort of all were
Because
like sort of
who's gonna
pulling
pick
apart their
that?
hair, And I imagine that's how they met. So they're very much cut from the same cloth, the three of them. And it's been really funny because I didn't realize, I think, when I wrote Best Ex Ever, my first book, how people would connect so much to the friendship and like to the sort of the non-romantic relationships within the book. And I'm really glad that they have because I think my friendships are and friendships are almost as important as the romantic relationships in the book. And I think
Yes,
that's
100%.
like they're kind of in I guess that's more part of the sort of cozy fantasy aspect of what I write is the kind of familial relationships, friendships, that sort of thing. Pet relationships as well.
Well, because that, well, and that is one thing I appreciate. So Ellis has a dog, Fig, and his dog, Hank, is kind of a theme throughout the book as well. But I love the fact that you never forgot about the dog. Because so often you read books where, like, they forget that there's an animal and they don't take it out or they don't feed it or they'll leave for like 2 or 3 days. And it's like, what happened to the dog? I mean, it's not a cat. Cats, they're fine. It's a dog. Like, they're not fine.
Yeah, I feel like Fig is such a big part of like whenever I picture Ellis, I picture Fig and Hank as well. Obviously no spoilers. But so I think, he is just he's just a man that wants to be in his garden. He just wants to go and runs with his dog. So like of course, if he rents a cottage and goes away for the weekend, she's gonna be there sleeping by the fire. But also like I just desperately want to have a dog. Like I had dogs growing up, but I haven't been able to have one for a while. So my cat is absolutely couldn't handle having another animal in this household. He
Yeah.
rules the roost. So, but I think a lot of that was me just being like, I wish I had a dog, and so I'm going to write the perfect dog.
So it's like all of your wants, like in all of your
Yeah,
books. You're like, I want
that's
this relationship during the pandemic and I want this dog, so I'm just gonna write it.
That's kind of what authors do, though. I think, especially when you're writing like a romance or like cozy or comforting fantasy or fiction, that is what you do. I will say one big thing that has been slightly awkward is people sort of saying like, oh, well, is this spicy relationship like you and your husband? I was like,
Yeah.
no, let's like, we can have a divide of like what people write in terms of intimate scenes and then their private life. That's different. But like, I think that's the one thing where I'm a bit like, maybe we don't need to ask any more questions.
Becky did a round table with a bunch of rom-com authors a couple weeks ago, and that was one of the things they brought up, like talking about that. And it's like, we do not need to know those questions. Like that is private. Like there are some things that can stay private. That's why we have friends to talk about those types of
Exactly.
things. So what's next for you?
Yeah, so it's very funny with publishing the way it works. Like, Love at First Sight hasn't even technically come out as we're recording this, and yet I've already delivered my book three, several months ago. So, book three is called Fairy Godlover, or is currently titled Fairy Godlover. It is a sapphic, falling in love with a fairy godmother romance. So it's actually, the main character is Annie Finch, who is Ellis Finch's sister. So Ellis being the main male character of Love at First Sight. You do meet Annie later in the book. She is an archivist at a small eclectic museum in South London, which is sort of based on the Horniman Museum, where I did some work experience a while back. And yeah, so she's an archivist there, and she inherits this huge mansion, which is quite inspired by the Knives Out mansion, I suppose, in terms of full of the oddities. And in a secret room on the attic, secret attic floor, behind a special bust, behind a special twisting bookcase, she discovers a fairy godmother called Essin, who hasn't been around, shall we say, since the Regency era, and who is here to help Annie get her one true love, who is her boss that she's in love with. Except obviously Essin, as a fairy godmother, as a fairy, only knows how to woo her Regency courting standards, which are obviously not quite the same as current swipe left, swipe right
Yeah, a
courting
little bit
standards of
different.
today. A little bit different. But obviously, as they kind of work together to help Annie get her, her romance going with her boss Max, obviously the pair of them grow much closer. It's a sort of Cyrano de Bergerac retelling a little bit,
Oh, interesting.
in the sense that it's like, let me help you write this love letter, except obviously it's a text because this is the 21st century. But yeah, it's my intention was to write something that's kind of in the magical academia space, sort of. Maybe you would comp this to like Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies. There are lots of different fairy species within the book, and it's sort of quite cozy and quite bookish. Obviously, having a museum archivist as your main character is going to be quite bookish, but also is a spicy, a sapphic romance as I could possibly write. So that's been really, really fun.
It
So yeah,
sounds
that's
fun.
my.
I am intrigued.
Yeah, that should be coming out sometime late summer, early autumn 2026. So, yeah, that's my
Well,
next
I look
book.
forward to that because Annie actually, like when we met her, she was just like this little ball of like energy that I was really excited about. So I wondered where you were going next because like Dina and Emmy are both like in relationships. So
Yeah,
like
both of
I knew
people have
you
been
couldn't go that
asking.
way because I was like,
Yeah.
there's not another friend. And unfortunately, Ellis doesn't really have friends.
No, he's a friendless man. I like to imagine that he's made friends with Rosemary's friends' partners by the end of the book. Like, they have a little manly group chat, they go
They
do
do,
activities
yes.
together.
Like he just needed to find his people.
He did, and it took him some time, but he found them. But
I
yeah, I
mean,
think
and
everyone was like
his
saying,
lady sees the ghost, but he's okay with that.
exactly. People were saying, like, will you write like an Emmy book? I was like, she is too busy having twins. Like, she's happily married with twins. Like, her romance is not over, it's still ongoing,
But
but
it's
she is in a
solid.
different
Like
it's
we're good
solid. She
there.
Yeah, she also, there's nothing paranormal about Imi either. You know, she is. So,
She has
yes.
her friends for
Yeah,
that.
exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Nadia, for coming on and
Thank you.
chatting. I have appreciated it, and it was wonderful talking to you about Love at First Fright.
Thank you so much for having me.
And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.